It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
7:02 and a half, John Anderson with Jason Wilde. Talking Packers. Oh, baby, that's good. And because he's so nice, the professor at Missouri gets to introduce and take it from here. 7:02 and a half, it's all yours.
Good evening, Jason Wilde. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Great to be with you, John Anderson. Oh, how I've missed you.
So here's the question I have. I was busy watching runners, then having to catch a plane. I didn't see the game. What did I miss?
Red zone ineptitude. First and foremost. You missed Rico Dowdle. No Dowdle at all about how good he was running the football. Those are the things that you missed. And then afterward, you missed lots of people questioning whether Matt LaFleur knows his nose from his elbow and whether or not he sucks as a coach, because that was – we got a lot of that afterward.
So I have questions about that. As I said, I thought, like, there were times last year he showed how really smart he was as a coach. Game plan against the Colts, and then the week later with Willis, they were almost completely different, opposite with throwing the ball and all those things. What I worry about this year is the things that seem to have plagued the team all year Like, they seem to be, we hear these are, we got to work on it, coach responsibility, they're fixable. And yet through eight games, we see a lot of the stuff we saw in week one. And so that's where I feel like there's got to be some sort of coaching issue, that in some of the things that we wanted to see progress on early, I don't know that we've seen progress on.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a few issues here, right? First of all, like, their offensive line has had problems, right? And I am a big fan of Elgton Jenkins. I'm not sure I'm a fan of him as a center, though, right? Like, you know, you're seeing free runners.
No, because we were told he was going to be great there. So, no, we can't. You can't think that. You have to think that he's great there, because we were told he's going to be great there.
Exactly. And so, you know, they built their whole plan of reconfiguring their offensive line on him moving, and they signed Aaron Banks instead of leaving him at left guard and signing a center. Or, you know, look, I understand that that Josh Myers was not Mike Webster. But, like, Josh Myers, very rarely do I remember there being free runners and unblocked guys. Like, when Adam Stenovich, going into the eighth game of the season, the offensive coordinator and former offensive line coach, is saying that we've had too many instances where we're blocking the wrong guy, that's a problem, right? That should not be happening. So that's – the offensive line is part of it. Also, you know, we started with this whole idea that, oh, the first couple weeks, and then definitely in the Pittsburgh game, the defensive mentality against them was, we're not going to let Josh Jacobs beat us, right? I mean, even at halftime – Mike Tomlin says to Melissa Stark that Josh Jacobs is the linchpin of their offense. We can't let him get going. And now the defensive approach against them has flipped to, they're not good enough as an offensive line to get the running back going, even if we play two safeties deep and take away their deep opportunities to throw the football. So they now... what do they do well? Like the last game, you know, they hit the one deep ball to Watson. But other than that, they moved the ball. They had, like, I think every drive they had, and they only had seven, but five of the seven reached the red zone, and six of the seven were at least nine plays in duration. The only one that wasn't was when Love threw that pick on first down, which Homer loves when that happens. They were four plays into that drive when he threw that pick. So, I mean, the problem in the NFL, if you're an offense, is that it's really hard to score a lot of points if you constantly are having to put together 8, 9, 10 play drives and you're not getting a lot of explosive plays. And they thrive on explosive plays, and they don't have enough of those. So right now, all is wrong with the world, if we're being honest, right, because of the performance. That said, if they flip the switch without Tucker Kraft now, which obviously makes it infinitely harder, if they flip the switch, suddenly now, you know, you go out and you beat the defending champs at home on Monday Night Football, and then nobody's thinking, oh, these guys don't know what they're doing. They stink, right? So Monday becomes an enormous game to see if they're able to right the ship and survive without Tucker Kraft. And I'm probably more optimistic. You know, I always talk about how I put my thumb on the scale when it's going one way or the other. Like, all the wide receivers they have, Wicks should be back this week. Reed will be back later this season. Like, are they going to miss Tucker Kraft? Absolutely. Do they have enough weaponry in the passing game? And do they have a really, really good running back that I don't think people should say, oh, all is lost, the season's over? No, I firmly believe they have enough to still – do I think they can win the Super Bowl? I don't. But I'm not sure I thought that before Kraft got hurt either.
Yeah, but I feel like those are the things we say all the time. We keep waiting for the wide receivers. They're going to be back. They'll be healthy. And we keep seeing kind of the same thing. And that's where I am mystified, and that's why I think, okay, at some level then a large portion of it then falls to LaFleur, that, you know, that everybody talked about after the first two games when they got so well. They got too big for their britches, and he couldn't calm them down, and then so then the Browns did it for him. And I feel like we're in the same spot again, and it's, you know, after a really good October. And so I just wonder at what point their changes are made, if not personnel-wise. But we just keep running through the same arguments. And I'm with you. The season not lost, they lead the division, right? Like, I feel like that's a good spot to be in at any point after week one or week 15. So it's not bad.
Yeah, I just think the biggest,
what are you going to do when you get a team? You know, like, how do I know that team's going to show up in the playoffs again? Or, you know, because just as I don't think the Carolina performance ends the season, I don't know that a win Monday validates it any more than the loss does to Carolina, if that makes sense.
No, it does make total sense. I don't think it does validate it. What I would say is, look, what I want to see, and what I think the biggest problem here is, and look, they were fine defensively. They allowed 16 points. I don't want to say that, you know, lay it at the feet of the defense, but they did give up 163 rushing yards in a game where their frail little quarterback guy didn't have to do anything. He threw for like 102 yards. Like, the best way to neutralize Micah Parsons is to barely throw the ball, and when you do, throw it quickly, right? So, to me, they, you know, and they came in. Here's a counter to your point. They came in like third in the league in run defense, both in terms of yards per game and yards per attempt. So it wasn't like a fake stat just because, well, they're giving up 78 yards a game, but that's because they're giving up 312 in passing.
Right.
So the fact that they could not stop the run was a major issue. Major. And so, again, to me, the biggest thing was I thought this team's formula, their identity, was they were going to win by running the ball with it at 1,300 yards last year and playing elite-level defense, which it appeared they were going to be after two games, after acquiring arguably the best pass rusher on the planet. And instead, we're now, you know, eight games into the season, and we're going, well, is their defense as good as we thought it was? Because it doesn't look as good as we thought it was, right? It's just a weird place to be, because I don't know if there's been a lot of seasons where I thought I knew who they were, and then suddenly they weren't who I thought they were. Like the old Denny Green, They are not who we thought they were. We're not letting them off the hook for it either.
Yeah, I just find that that's half to half and not even week to week. Falls to the floor, you know?
Yeah, think about last week in Pittsburgh. Like, they played, they had 3-3 and outs in the first half. They were terrible in the first half. And then they put it together in the second half, and because it's the second half and they win the game and they score 28 points in the second half, then we walk out of there going, oh, they're pretty good, right? And the problem this week was they didn't play a good half either half, and that's how you end up where you ended up.
I have this from Mrs. Anderson in the kitchen. She is not happy about you putting the kicking thing out in the universe, and she would like you to know that you are to blame. And what are the Packers going to do about the situation that you have created?
I would assume they will somehow, even though the trade deadline has passed, I'm assuming they're working on getting a third kicker on the roster.
I don't know, man.
Like, Matt LaFleur, happy to tell you, hindsight is 20/20. And as I told him yesterday, no, Matt, we were second guessing the 4th and 8 decision before you even ran the play. if you had enough concerns about McManus that you didn't want him kicking for 2 weeks, and you saw what Haversick did, this is not the olden days where you went on injured reserve, your season was over. It's like one of the few good things that came out of that COVID season is that now you have these 4 games. It's like the old disabled list in baseball and now the injured list in baseball. Like, you don't have to just decide, well, either I'm going to carry this guy or his season's over. If they'd have just IR'd him for 4 games and let Luke Savrasic kick, maybe he wouldn't be missing now, because I also think not only is he not 100% healthy, but now he's looking over his shoulder, and he's never going to admit that. But like, the kid went 10-for-10. You've now missed 3 kicks in the last 2 games. Like, I don't know how you're not looking over your shoulder. You're a human being. You're not a robot. So it just feels like, you know, whether or not, I don't even know if Lucas Haversick will ever kick another game for the Packers, right? Matt LaFleur said that's the plan when asked if McManus was going to be the kicker this week. But this is another instance of you've created a problem that maybe was avoidable. And I hate, you know, Homer being the old tennis player, self-inflicted wounds or unforced errors. And it just feels like this: you put him on IR for 4 weeks, you let Lucas Haversick kick. You don't know at the time that he's going to go 10-for-10 over the next 2 games and set the franchise record for longest field goal. But, man, now you've created an issue that hadn't been there. You said it's all the same problems every week. No, kicking was not a problem until the last 2 games. So that's at least, at least it's something new for you.
Jason, I have a solution for all the offense without Tucker Kraft. All they have to do is exactly what they did on the last series. That's it. All they got to do is play that. 21-2. They had to do a 4th and 3, but they're 5-11-6-8. They passed the ball on like 7 of the first 9, but then when they got inside the 10, they ran it 3 times in a row. The answer to what they need to do is right there. We saw it in a game in which they did nothing until the final 7 minutes of the game in terms of going all the way down the field. Quickly, hurry up. Will they use any of that again?
And let's be honest, Musgrave, all 3 of his catches were on that drive.
Yep, 11, 5,
so
and 8.
You're not suddenly going to transform him into Tucker Kraft. That's not going to happen. But I do think that there are things he can do for you, but it's not the same things, because Tucker Kraft could do everything. And he is Luke Musgrave is more of an overgrown wide receiver. He's more JerMichael Finley than he is Martin Chimura. And Chewy could do everything. That's why, and Chewy will tell you Tucker's better and everything else. But the fact of the matter is that he is a well-rounded, do-everything tight end. And those guys are few and far between, and they don't have two of them. And some teams are happy to just have one. And right now they got none.
And lastly, Jason, it's fair, right? It's accurate that this was all about analytics, that the 4th and 8 was purely analytics. And whenever there needs to be a discussion on why LaFleur does what he does, it's analytics, right?
No, false.
False?
100% false. In fact, he admitted that he didn't ask the analytics guys until afterward what the win probability said. So he made that decision. And what I think what it was about was a guy who, quite frankly, wasn't prepared for the 4th down play to be 4th and 8. I think he thought it was going to be 4th and 1. And when it was 4th and 8, he wasn't ready for it. And they bungled it. And then they had to call a timeout. Then they ran the same play from a different formation. And then that didn't work. Like, it was poorly, poorly conceived.
All right.
And he didn't check with the analytics guys until after
that.
Then
he's as stupid as I thought. That's the kind of thing that gets you fired. It's hard to explain that level of stupidity. It is. No one has a defense. I thought that's what it was, the analytics. He's got players hurt. Whatever he was deciding to do, he doesn't have his players. It's 4th and 8. I can't. Then, right? Not that he's an idiot, but it'll be hard for him to ever do anything as stupid as that. And then when they screwed it up, he actually had a chance to recover because he could have just taken the 5-yard penalty and then kicked the field goal because five
Correct.
Yards wasn't going to make any difference, right?
Yeah, to me, that's the criticism, because analytics doesn't take into account who the players that you have available on the play are.
Of course.
And
yeah.
to me, that was where yeah. he...
All right, I apologize for apologizing to him. He's as stupid as I thought. I mean, that's a bad high school... No, that's a bad high school... That's bad high school coaching. All right, thanks, Jason. God, I thought
Bye, guys. Take care.
I thought I was better, 7-2.5. Now I'm back to how I felt on Sunday. I'm incapable of comprehending, as smart as he is, that he can be that stupid. Next.